AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. If you received our email this morning, send it out to a friend right now and get them involved. We're going to have a very interesting broadcast today for all of you, very informative. And also, you will get a copy of today's program afterwards this afternoon, and we ask you that you send it on to family and friends as well. As you know, our theme for this year is encouraging America's businesses to highlight on their labels and packaging that their items are made and assembled in America. But first, you know, the broadcast promo, which was presented by Henry Chaplinsky and his kids and his wife, says a lot of crazy things, but very important things, like, where are national leaders? Yeah, where are national leaders? As we're trying to change the reality of America, where are these people? So that all of you can share the word, go to that phone, invite family members and friends to tune in, and encourage them also, if they live at a distance, to go onto AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Joining us today is Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the well-known principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. And joining us today for another lively program is Curtis Ellis, the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance. He's very well known in the media and also an advisor to President Trump. Before I turn to Mark, because I know that he has some very important things to report on, you know, ladies and gentlemen and panel members, a lot of good things have been happening in America as a result of efforts like ours, because we stayed focused and consistent with our message for all these years. And I only wish the best for the people that are in our audience, and I wish the elected people would follow the example that we are providing during this broadcast through the commentaries, through Mr. Ellis's various commentaries that are in the media. Because every time I hear from listeners and I go into the community for various events, and every time I see my daughters, my granddaughter, Gabriella, when I look at the pictures that Rich Logis sends me of his daughter, Isabella, when I see the pictures of Henry Chaplinsky and his sons and daughters, I think about all the young people in America. And I think, where are those national leaders? And by the way, Larkin's family, Mark's family, Curtis's family, I feel that what we're doing on this broadcast is for America's future. It's for America's people. Those young people today deserve no less than the great America that we knew in our time. These young people need the push that we can give, the push that we have been giving. And with some very important changes taking place in Washington at this time, and also in some of the state-level governments, we are seeing good results. Our children, our grandchildren, have to inherit no less of an America than we did. Do you agree with that, Henry?
Of course.
Of course. I mean, it's, you know, I want to thank all of you, first of all, because this was a very active week, especially with the football game and the Eagles and everything else going on. Many people had a lot of things to say. I'd like to see more of the jerseys and all the other fanfare 100% made in America, because right now the shirts are made foreign and they are only imprinted in America, and they're getting a pretty decent dollar. And all of the masks, the underdog masks and shirts and all, I want to see that also. But even though they have not turned everything around yet, we will keep on their butts, and we will get. And maybe at the end of the show, we're also going to give a special presentation of what we did as a special Eagle cheer. And I know that Larkin received it. I know that Curtis received it. I know that Rich received it and told me to play it the whole time. And Henry and I and a few others are in the presentation itself. So thanks for all your help. Our children, our grandchildren, every American, every person of every race and creed deserves nothing but the best that America can provide. Today, I'm going to begin with Mark Andel, who is certainly a man who has kept focus and consistency in everything that he has done. And I'll tell you, last week he had a very special visitor from the Small Business Administration. And I'm going to ask Mark Andel to start off the show today. Give us a report on your special visitor.
Yeah, how you doing, Michael? Thank you, and Curtis, and Rich, and Larkin, and Henry. Go Eagles. I watched that game. I thought of you guys. What a great, great time for your city. So very.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was great.
Great, great stuff. That brings everybody together. You know, last week Mike had a very big day. I couldn't talk a lot about it until it had happened, which was last Friday at 10 o'clock. Linda McMahon, who serves as the 25th administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administrator, flew in and chose the Nickel City Buffalo and chose the Made in America store in General Welding to visit. We were very honored. We had to clear security days before. And she came in, and I'll tell you, you know, she was the CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, and I never met her, had looked up a little bit. She came in, and we went around that store. We had 1 hour. We showed her a video and did a speech for her, and then she got the mic, and she was just point on. She was chosen for a reason. She's been there, done that. She's been bankrupt. Just an incredible person once I met her. She can keep up. She listened. She picked up every product. She knew welding and steel, and I was very, very impressed with Linda. And she, you know, she's responsible to, you know, listen to what do we got, almost 30 million small businesses, I think, in the United States. But she was chosen for a reason, and boy, was it a great choice, because she sits in a cabinet with our president. And I personally had a great Small Business Administration experience back in 1994. I was a young kid, 23, never quit, Gene, and I had gotten started on my first building, and the banks pulled the plug. I had nowhere to turn, and my father's friend had told me, you know, check out with Frank Sorrentino, who runs the Buffalo SBA. Frank's 83 years old, been running it for 51 years now. And I didn't know who it was. My father's friend, there was that one guy that made a call for me, and I'll tell you, Frank got a hold of it, and he backed the bank. And the rest was history. I would not exist with the Small Business Association, along with SCORE that Larkin represents, just two great organizations for entrepreneurs listening to be part of. But when Linda came, just a beautiful tour, and then she said, let's go do General Welding. Well, security wasn't really into that because they haven't secured the building. Well, we went in 7 minutes. We toured the facility. Larkin's toured it with me. It took longer than 7 minutes. And Linda asked great questions. Brother-in-law's involved with steel down in Texas, and she knew some welding. And just, Mike, we went to a round table after that. We're 10 business people sat at the fourth floor of the Small Business Administration in Buffalo, and they asked questions about taxes, skilled trades, banking. We'll get into later in the show, but I was point on because of you guys, and she really wanted to hear what we're going through in these current times, and it was just an unbelievable day, Mike.
Wonderful. I'm telling you, Mark, that's what I said, focus and consistency, and you're definitely the man who has done it. I'm going to turn now to Mr. Larkin Connolly. How are you doing, Larkin?
I'm wonderful, Michael. Good morning to everybody listening, to all of my fellow panel members. Mark has tried to call me. He claims I don't answer my phone much. I guess I'm guilty as charged. But I finally talked to him yesterday, and I got such an excellent report. One of the things that Mark failed to mention, before I go on, one of the things that he failed to mention that I want to predict, because I love to predict and then be correct, have somebody say, hey, you often predicted that. Linda McMahon, who is just a wonderful administrator and has done some marvelous things on her own, said to Mark, I can't wait to tell the president about what I just saw in Buffalo. And I think it kind of knocked Mark back a little bit. You're actually going to see and tell the president. And I reminded Mark that Linda McMahon sits on the cabinet. She's just like the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Commerce. Linda McMahon is a member of the cabinet. And of course, she's going to probably report to the entire cabinet. And she said, I really want to bring President Trump up here to see this. And Mark, again, I'm sure was quite taken back by the remark. I want to make a prediction. This is exactly what turns Donald Trump on. This is exactly the kind of thing that he is pushed the hardest for. Right or wrong in many other instances or any other occasions, growing small businesses in America is the backbone and the foundation of what he's trying to do. He's trying to make a better place for American workers and a better place for small businesses. And I have a prediction. Before his first term is up, Donald Trump will be at Made in America to visit the initiative. I'm just that certain that he will be so excited when he hears about it from Linda at their cabinet meeting next week.
I can't Mark, say how good that would be. Oh my God, what a great pleasure, Mark. Let's keep our fingers crossed and our prayers directed toward making that happen.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That small business is what Donald Trump is about. And as crazy as it sounds, you have to think of the Trump Organization and Donald Trump's business as a small business. I know it doesn't legally qualify as such, but it's a family-owned business. And compared to the mega global corporations and publicly owned entities, Trump Organization operates like a small business. It's the family that makes the decisions. He's got the kids working in it. He's got the everybody reports to a family member. And so in a very important way, in this multi-trillion dollar economy, an organization and a business like Donald Trump's construction and real estate empire is really a small business, characteristically, by character, even if not by official legal definitions. It was congratulations, Mark. Linda McMahon is a wonderful, wonderful person. She is Trump through and through, a true Trump supporter. A little detail, I was supposed to go work in the Small Business Administration. I was in the Labor Department and was on deck to go into the Small Business Administration when I left government service and left the administration to work with America First Policies. It's a great outfit. This is exactly what built America. I think that prediction is going to come true before this is all over. We're going to see Donald Trump in your store.
Very good. I love it. You know,
it has to happen. And if for no other reason, because of, you know, what Mark has done for the Made in America label, listen, he has birthed this movement. If you look at any calendar, you're going to find that one of the early supporters of this initiative was Mark and what he did. And I think Linda McMahon knows that. If she didn't, she found it out. And I think that she's, you know, it's funny. And again, for reasons of pride, I guess, I haven't heard the whole story. The whole story is that, a word could not be said because of security.
Yeah.
Mark would love to have made, well, I don't think, no, if you knew it by last week's program, But he was told that the trip's off if anybody finds out that Linda McMahon is coming. And I think Mark thought that was a little strange to be that much of a power punch. And it ends up that this was one of the final destinations that Donald Trump had picked to come, and he was going to go with Linda McMahon. Is that not true, Mark? And I think he ended up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and Ivanka Trump was coming, and it was on and off all week, and it was totally confidential. They bring their own press. You can't speak about it until the minute after they leave.
Yeah, and so it was he came very close to scoring the president this time. And for reasons that we'll never understand or know, the president chose to go to Pittsburgh and make a really great speech in Pittsburgh, which got great coverage. So, Mark, I spend more time doffing my hat to you and thanking you and congratulating you for what you've accomplished. And I'm telling you, the supreme payday here for you is going to be a visit from Donald Trump. I just know it.
Beautiful. You know, Larkin and Curtis and everybody, Mark, I wanted to ask you, is it possible we can get a little message to her to promote our idea to encourage America's businesses, big and small, to do the packaging on their labels that they're made or assembled in America? I see that many of the manufacturers, even people that you see in places like Home Depot and all, have been putting the flag on their packaging. Even when it's a piece of wood, it's stamped America, USA, something. It's starting to get, you know, into the system. I think a big push from Donald Trump or from Linda McMahon would really help this.
Yep. Mike, I just want to say she is from the same fabric as us. I mean, point on, no arrogance, no entitlement, just point on, gets it. So she believes in Made in America. She believes in what we're doing. And thank you guys all for the kind comments. Again, it's not just me, a great team, great family, great people just doing good things like you, Mike. We're consistent with our message. We educate, we raise awareness, and we stick to the same plan every day for the good of the good.
And, you know, this past weekend, we witnessed something very foolish in America, the wasting of millions of our tax dollars with this budget idiocy that went on. First of all, what they were holding up the budget over was discussed months ago. They had months and months to put it on the table and get it finished up. Instead, they stopped the government from running for a few days, wasted hundreds of millions of dollars, starting things up, stopping things, furloughing people, total idioticness. And now, you know, they're trying to pull the same rigmarole. I'm concerned because I'd like the Dreamers to be allowed to stay in America. They've been in America. Let's get everybody on the table. Everybody knows that's my policy. Get everybody on the table, everybody paying taxes. Let's move forward. You're an American. Salute the American flag. Be of your heritage whenever you choose, but you salute the American flag at all times. I think that too many of the people in Washington are not business people, so they don't know the stresses and strains of what it is to run a business, and that is exactly why they allowed this shutdown to occur. Rich, what did you think of the shutdown?
So, good morning, guys. Hey, Curtis, how you doing? A couple things. Let me comment, Michael, first on your question, and I want to get to Larkin's comment about the president and Mark's store. You know, Michael, if people listening to our show have never read a book called Rules for Radicals. It was written by a guy named Saul Alinsky. You know who he is, right, Curtis? Saul Alinsky was one of the heroes to the Obamas and Clintons. He was a Chicago community agitator who dedicated his gospel of how to community agitate to Lucifer. That's a true story. He dedicated his book to Lucifer. And one of the things that he talks about in that book, which is a manual for how to go and interrogate and agitate communities and businesses, et cetera, is he said something called the issue is never the issue. And that's a very important detail. That's a very important mindset to understand how a lot of these politicians, Democrat and Republican, actually, both operate. So the Democrat issue, Michael, with DACA is that we have many illegal aliens in the country. They've been here for a long time. They contribute to the country. They're mostly not committing other crimes except for being illegal. And let's get them here, get them a green card, and then, of course, get them a voter registration card. Well, that's a Democrat issue, but that's not really the issue. And frankly, I don't really care about that stuff because I care about what John Adams once said, which is that we're a nation of laws, not of men. So the Dem issue is that, Michael. But the real issue, what the actual issue is behind it all, is these guys in Congress, like Schumer and Pelosi and these people, they are exploiting and ping-ponging around families, men, women, and children. And they're doing it because they think that that's what their voter base wants. And that's what politicians do, right, Curtis? They spend a lot of money to figure out what their constituents want so they can sell that message to them to get reelected. So in reality, Michael, what this DACA bill is just, I see it as just more exploitation of people. That's what it is.
Correct.
And it's designed, and its ultimate ploy and design is to get millions of people on voter registration rolls, irrespective of how they got here. Now, being illegal in America, which I'm no immigration legal expert, but there are differing ways that people can become illegal. You can pop the border and never be legal in the first place. There's a lot of people in the country, Michael, who came to the United States legally and didn't renew their visas, or their visa renewal applications were declined, and now they're technically illegal. So there are a lot of people in the country right now who came here legally, but now they're illegal. Well, those people, Michael, do have a mechanism to get work permits, green cards, and then eventually citizenship. That exists right now. But are we going to be a country that's going to simply say, if you hop the border and you come across the Texas-Mexican border, we have no idea who you are, you just walk right in, and the reward for that is going to be eventual citizenship. The reason, Michael, that most people are against it is because it's not because that we're not humane and we don't understand that illegal aliens do make money and work and all of that. It's because the goal of it all is to get a voter registration card. And the right to vote in this country is the most important civil right and duty and civic duty that we all have. So DACA is designed to turn purple states irreversibly and indefinitely blue, period. That's the issue. That's what this is all about. All I care about is the end result, Michael.
Now, here is something I want to bring up regarding this DACA issue. First of all, I think that the government shutdown disrespected many American workers, whether they are government employees or the people who work with government. It was a total disrespect of them, because this should have been discussed from the time it was announced by President Trump that the DACA issue has to be resolved by the elected people in the Senate and the House. But more importantly, people stop me and ask me, Michael, they're saying 800,000 Dreamers. But how about their parents? Where's their parents come in on this? I said, well, sometimes you have two parents and maybe a brother and a sister that are considered the Dreamers. But how about their parents? How are their parents going to be legalized in the country once the Dreamers are permitted to stay? Curtis, do you know?
Yes, you raise a really good point here, and Rich really raises a very good point, that this whole discussion is really not about these people,
not at all.
DACA recipients, many of whom are 31 years old, they're in their 30s, I don't call them kids. Maybe they were brought here as children, but they're no longer kids. So to call them DACA kids, again, is a way to tug at the heartstrings. But that's not really the issue. The issue is to get them on the voting rolls. This is, and I don't like to use the term Dreamers, because again, we're now ceding the language to the other side. Your kids have dreams. My kids have dreams. My neighbor's kids have dreams. Everybody has dreams. To call them Dreamers is to give second class status to the American citizens who have dreams. So we're supposed to give these people credit as having dreams. Meanwhile, that person in Western Pennsylvania or in Eastern Pennsylvania, we're supposed to give them fentanyl and a welfare check. They don't have dreams. I mean, come on, it's insulting. But to that point, so yeah, there are 690,000 people who registered for DACA, but you see the radical wing of the Democratic Party wants full citizenship, not just for them, but for their parents and for the millions of others who never registered for DACA. Maybe they were brought here as children. But so this is sort of they're the Trojan horse. The DACA recipients, the 690,000, are the Trojan horse, or they're the camel's nose under the tent. Really, the goal here is to get all, whether it's 11 million or 20 million illegals, voting status. And it's also the real goal is to erase our borders and erase the notion of something called the United States of America and something called citizenship. It's to debase the currency of citizenship by extending it to all, to any of the 7 billion people on planet Earth who wish to reside in the continental United States and Hawaii. And this goes to Rich's point. The left continually and cynically uses these issues, which sound common sense and acceptable, and well, any decent person doesn't want to deport somebody who was brought here as a child and who's lived here their whole life. They're cynically, that's not the issue, though. They cynically use that to advance their true agenda, which they never openly admit. Remember, back in the 1950s, the Communist Party USA, headed by Gus Hall, the Communist Party USA, which was a legally registered political party right there alongside the Democrats, Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and, you know, whatever parties we have at the state level, Conservative Party, you had the Communist Party. Their platform, they had a convention, they nominated candidates, they endorsed a platform. They openly admitted they followed the Moscow party line. This was a Moscow-directed entity, and they openly admitted this. This was not hidden. So you want to talk about Russia collusion in American elections? It's as old as apple pie. You know, it goes back to 1917, I guess. Well, their party platform called for civil rights. Right? They endorsed, they were one of the first political parties in America to openly endorse civil rights for black Americans. But what did they say? They said that the black Americans should be given their own Soviet republic in the southern states. It should be carved out a black African-American republic. So while they claim to be for civil rights and they should be able to, anybody should be able to go to the bathroom or eat at any lunch counter they wanted, their real agenda was to carve up the United States to dissolve the United States and to undermine it by creating a black republic in Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, and northern Georgia. I mean, this is just bizarro. So publicly they say, oh, well, we're for this very common sense thing, whether it's, you know, whether it's civil rights, equal rights for all Americans, or whether it's not deporting these poor people who were brought over here through no fault of their own. As soon as they get to the through no fault of their own, it's like, oh, and they've got to be able to bring their parents in. And then, oh, we need family reunification. And they don't say that family could be second cousin, third cousin, 12th cousin, twice removed, and then each one of those people gets to do the same. They hide that because really their agenda is not so much about these people, these 690,000 or even a larger number. Their real agenda is to, as Rich said, population replacement, bring in as many people as possible who are going to vote their way for their ultimate goal, which is to undermine the imperialist, racist, white supremacist a colonial entity known as the United States of America. It's that simple. And through this shutdown, what we saw over the weekend is we started to see the mask slip, and we started partially revealed was the Democrats' true agenda. They don't just hate Donald Trump. They will do anything to destroy Trump and everything he stands for. It's like that commander, that apocryphal commander in the Vietnam War. We had to destroy the village in order to save it. They will destroy the economic progress we've made. They will destroy the booming economy we're seeing in order to destroy Trump, even if it means, as I say, in order to get rid of Trump, and to even if it means they will do that. And if they get control of Congress in November, in the midterms election, mark my words, they will bring to a halt the progress we've made, the revival of the American economy, jobs coming back, wages going up, jobs being created, manufacturing coming back. They will stop all that. And we see in California, for example, the Democrats in California at the state level have proposed a bill that businesses in California have to give back half of whatever they got from the federal tax cut. They have to give it to the state of California to fund the welfare programs. All those people living in tents in downtown L.A., they're going to get a raise. They'll get a boost. They'll get a plastic bag to defecate in because of the federal tax cut and because the Democrats put them first, want to make sure people like that get more. They don't care about businesses being able to hire, being able to innovate, being able to expand. They want all businesses to give up the tax cut that they got as a result of Donald Trump and the Republicans in Congress and give it to fund the welfare state in California. That's what the Democrats will do if they take control of Congress in November. We cannot let that happen.
This is what kind of amazes me and how unfocused I think this country is. Drug overdose, opioid crisis, drug overdose is now the leading cause of death of Americans under the age of 50. Did you know that? Of death for people under the age of 50. Where is our government attention to this problem that hasn't slowed down for 2 seconds? Nowhere. And the other thing, and Curtis, this is for you. Where the hell is the rule of law? What have we done to the laws that we've passed? How can we possibly take a look at 600,000 people and say, let's automatically make them citizens? There is a process in place. And if they were brought here at 4 and 5 years old, and they're now 28, 29, and 30, what the heck have they been doing? Why have they not taken advantage of the process and gone and become citizens?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, I hadn't even thought of that one. Yeah, maybe they were brought here through no fault of their own, but they've been sentient beings for the last 20, 30 years. Why haven't they taken any step to do anything? You know, that's such a good point about rule of law. And that's, it occurred to me some time ago that we've really entered a post-constitutional phase of government. This is when Obama was president. We entered a post-constitutional phase of government where the rules, whether it's the process set out by the Constitution, and actually, as you pointed out, rule of law itself has become passé. It's become
irrelevant.
Forgotten. If I believe it was General Kelly, when he was head of Homeland Security, he said to Congress, we enforce the laws, my department. If you don't like the law, change the law.
Curtis,
don't
I agree.
Tell us not to enforce the law, change the law. That's your job. You don't like the law, change it.
But you know, Curtis and everyone listening, the biggest problem we have in America is that people don't know the law. If I went on the street right now and asked 10 people, tell me exactly what you have to do to become a citizen of the United States if you immigrated to the United States, I'll bet most of the people would not know. How many years? I think that should all be addressed in this DACA situation. Most people don't know.
The saddest part about America is that the heck with what's the process for becoming an American citizen? Ask half of them who the vice president is. Ask half of them who the Speaker of the House is. Ask half of them who the minority leaders are. Ask half of them the three branches of government, which was done on late-night television, and not one person interviewed could answer the question, the three branches of government.
Larkin, ask him why Made in America matters.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to educate him, right?
Now, here, this is something that it could be settled. Last week, I mentioned that the budget bill should have been totally separate from everything else. And if that had happened, we would not have had the shutdown. We would not have wasted hundreds of millions of dollars riling up our troops, all of our federal employees, having all these notices go out, all the press covering it for 2.5 days, how the world is falling. But the press, once the government was reopened, they should have said, now that it's reopened, let's start addressing the DACA issue. Exactly why do we want the people here? Why should they be given the privilege to be here? Nothing.
It's unbelievable you can shut down. I mean, if I had an upper management meeting here and just decided to shut my company down, you can't do it. It's unbelievable that's what we do these days.
Because these people in Washington, most of them have never had a business. They never had to earn
money.
Pay people. They're sitting there worrying about when they're going to get their next haircut and their next massage and go to the spa and walk around and go into the pool, go
One
to the steam
selfish.
Room. They're not worried about this. Just watching them standing around talking and laughing after the vote was taken to shut the place down, I thought to myself, every one of them should be escorted O-U-T, out!
I've got a comment. This is, I guess, more or less directed for Curtis and Larkin. But did you guys see that story I sent you last night about what's going to start happening in Philadelphia to deal with the opioid crisis? I was so shocked, Larkin. Well, Philadelphia is going to open what is called a safe injection site, where people who are addicted to opioids are going to designated locations to have safe injections to get their drugs because they're addicted. And, you know, Larkin, that just...
I don't object with what Rich is saying. I don't question that tactic. I really don't. And I'm no more intelligent about this issue than you are, except that I've been touched by the opioid crisis.
And it is a crisis.
And it is a crisis. I don't know what I think everybody and the intelligent crowd, the caring crowd about reality is trying to figure out what the answer is. But I'm here to tell you from firsthand experience, if you have an opioid addiction, it's almost incurable. I could almost say that it's incurable. And the fact that they're trying to, how do you fix them? How do you fix somebody that has an opioid addiction? There's a great story in The Atlantic. It's online, theatlantic.com, and it's a story written by the former vice chair of the Joint Chief of Staff, who lost his son Jonathan to an addiction. And he did all the right things and some amazing, amazing things to kind of correct the issue. And I'm not going to ruin the story, but I mean, he did all these things. He and his wife were so dedicated to making their son well, and he came so far and applied to college and went to college, and the first weekend at school died of a fentanyl overdose. It's the saddest story you'd ever want to hear. I don't think Philadelphia is passing that law because they want to see they want to make it easier to get high in Philadelphia. I think they're doing it because if they could bring them all to one place, they may be able to work on the issues a little bit better.
And that is well said. There is one thing that's very interesting. A large percentage of the people who have opioid problems because they have, you know, issues, no work, family problems, pain problems, the work issue is the biggest thing. That has to be addressed in the high schools and the junior highs to already tell people.
Michael, can I make a point about
yes.
it? Because, you know, Arkin, I'm not, and again, I'm with you, Arkin. I'm no expert in this, and I don't proclaim to be. And I'm siding with you on this issue without really knowing much about it, but I'm siding with you on it. But my equally red alert DEFCON 5 concern is, are people making heroin in the city of Philadelphia? Of course they're not. So how in the hell is it so readily available? How is it so easily accessible? And you want to know a big reason why? We were just talking about it a few minutes ago, called immigration, called porous borders. That's what it is. And I listen to so many of these, I mean, some of the progressives I hear, they're not inhabiting this world called the real world we live in, because I listen to them talk about that there's a demand for it and there's a supply. There's a demand for pedophilia as well. We don't think it's okay that it happens, though. So I'm interested, Larkin, in how is it so easily obtained and readily available? And I'm telling you guys something. In my opinion, the states of emergency in our American inner cities, and we know that the vast majority of those cities are run by one party, but I don't want to make this partisan, because we're talking about human beings here. We're talking about people's sons and daughters here, right, who get hooked on this crap. The states of emergency, Mike, in American inner cities is the most underreported, most covered up story in the United States. Period.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Period. We've already reached it. It's not like we're there now. We've been past reaching the crises and states of emergency in our inner city. You know, I'm not the person who's an apologist for America, but we should never shy away from talking about the legitimate, serious, deadly problems that occur. I mean, Michael, the story that I sent you guys was talking about Kensington. You could walk to Kensington, right? I mean, you can walk to Kensington from the Polish Center.
Right.
It is literally you could see from your window in the Polish Center an area that has, according to this story that I sent you guys, Philadelphia is tops in opioid overdoses, Larkin. We are way past the state of emergency on this right now. We're way past it because this stuff comes in seemingly so easy. Law enforcement, Curtis, doesn't seem to be able to do its job. We have an acceptance level that things are just supposed to be the way they are. We have an acceptance level where I see these stories all the time. People convicted of drug dealing, drug selling, in and out of the jails, in and out, in and out. The cops know them by first names. I mean, rule of law. We're a nation of laws, Michael, not of men. You know who believe we're a nation of men and not of laws? Tyrants and dictators. That's who thinks that.
Rich,
we're a nation of men. I'll make the laws because the golden rule is he who has the gold makes the rules. Bull. It's not supposed to be that way here.
Richard, I wanted to say this to you, that, and I mentioned this, I believe, in our last broadcast, that 5 years ago, I had a discussion with a mayor outside the city of Philadelphia who is having a pretty big opioid situation in his county. And in Bucks County, a wealthy county, a very nice area, the problem is nobody wants to tackle the sources of the problem. Number one, the drug manufacturers, and secondly, the doctors. There is two big problems. They you don't give somebody a 90-day supply of something because it's regarded that you will need 90 days to recover from something. In Europe, you get a 10-day supply. You come back in 10 days, you get a 10-day supply. And this year, we've made excuses for years as to why this is taking place, why it can't be arrested. And the police have many, very oftentimes, their hands tied not to do too much, because the big people who are selling the drugs, the doctors who are prescribing the drugs, and the manufacturers in America and outside of America who are bringing them in don't want to lose their profit.
This is a horrible, horrible crisis, and you raise a good point. Let's not forget that 40%, some close to 40% of the people that are on prescription opioids are having their prescription paid for by the federal government under Medicaid. It is just shocking. It is really, so there is so much profit being made by the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, people being diagnosed with a with chronic pain that maybe really don't have it. But there's something else. As time is running short here, I absolutely wanted to, I'm sorry I have to change the subject, but I wanted to make sure your listeners are aware of this. We have talked in the past about the renewable fuel standards and the effect this Environmental Protection Agency requirement for independent refineries to purchase credits for ethanol credits if they can't blend ethanol into the fuels they refine. They're required to buy credits, paper credits, which have been, you know, they're at the mercy of speculators. And, well, here's the news today. Philadelphia Energy Solutions, the largest East Coast refinery, and it's right, you know where it is, it's right in your backyard, they have filed for bankruptcy. They have filed for Chapter 11, and one of the main reasons they had to do this is because they have spent more than $800 million on these biofuel credits to comply with the law. This is the refiner's biggest expense after buying crude oil. They have to buy crude oil in order to refine crude oil because that's the business they're in. Their next largest expense, complying with an EPA regulation that is total flimflam, which is open to abuse by Wall Street traders to buy these renewable fuel credits. Look, they are not required to open up a blending facility so they can blend ethanol into their fuel. No. They are instead required to buy these paper credits, which are the price of which is manipulated by folks like Citibank and other Wall Street traders. It is accomplishing its purpose, which is driving the small independent refiners out
of business. Right. Now, Curtis, how could it be stopped?
Right. The president and the EPA can change the regulation. It does not even require a new law. They could allow, we could still have ethanol and still have renewable fuels and still have, you know, the cleaner air that this is supposed to deliver. I don't want to get into a whole debate as to whether ethanol is good or bad or energy efficient or not, because there are questions about that. But let's just take, for the sake of argument, say we want to use ethanol. There are plenty of large refineries that can blend it and use it and meet the goals. There, and we could count the export of ethanol toward the goal, the how many millions and billions of gallons of ethanol we want produced in this country. Count our exports of ethanol toward that goal, and we'll be able to keep our independent refineries like the ones down there
in Marcus Hook
on the bay.
And let me ask you this. Who is addressing the issue of this bankruptcy right now?
As a matter of fact, the union, the United Steelworkers, that represents the people working in these refineries, they are addressing it. as is Ted Cruz. Senator Ted Cruz has met with the president. He wants to see a reasonable, common-sense solution that we can have our refineries and we can have our ethanol as well. So the corn farmers in Iowa will do okay, and the people working in refineries will do okay. And when it gets really cold, like it did a couple weeks ago here, we need these refineries in the Northeast producing the fuel oil that heats our homes. We can't be dependent on Gulf Coast refineries to get the fuel here. And a lot of that fuel, as well as heating our homes, it also generates electricity. In these cold snaps, the fuel into the power plants switches over to oil because the natural gas gets diverted into the home heating market. So we need a distributed capacity for refining oil, and the government regulations right now are concentrating the capacity refinery into a few hands and driving out these small independent refineries. And that's not good. That is not good at all.
Curtis, I appeal to you to appeal to people in Washington to have that as one of the regulations removed. For every one regulation imposed, two will be removed.
Right.
Get that one off the books. Because
put that one on the top of the list.
I've been following this a little bit because we have people down there. Our signal is very strong down that way. It's ridiculous. They've been out protesting it a few times already, and it just seems that nobody wants to hear them. Somebody is making money on the issue, but it's not in Marcus Hook. It's in in some big, tall office building in New York where they're trading paper. And this has got to stop. American workers were speaking up. They did come out and protest. They had several rallies, but nobody has been hearing them. I hope maybe it can be addressed by Washington in the next few days. Ladies and gentlemen, before we get near the end of our broadcast, I want to thank you. This is the kind of broadcast that helps people understand what's been going on. We discuss a lot of issues. I myself am disappointed in watching the major news media just go on and on about the same negative issues. It's no information. There's nothing for me to learn or you to learn to watch it. So I think they're killing themselves in the process. But we have this Tuesday evening, I believe, we are going to be seeing the State of the Union. Is that right, Curtis?
That is correct, yes.
And that will also be Rich Loggia's birthday. Is that correct, Rich?
Yeah, the big 4-1.
You're 29. We're all 29, I told you before. It has to be under 50, so you're 29. You're the youngster. Now, I want to say, first of all, Rich, a happy birthday to you.
Thank you
for your unbelievable participation with this broadcast. As I said earlier, I just saw it the other day when I was going through my texts, and I saw you and little Isabella. What a beautiful, beautiful picture that is. That cheers me up when I see this. We also have another event coming up. And that's the Eagles are coming up very soon for the Super Bowl. And I'm going to ask Henry, we did a special version of the Eagles polka. We have a lot of Polish listeners. So we're going to play the Eagles polka. So stop by and listen.
Join in the fun. Time for the Eagles polka. Grab a partner and shout it out loud. Join in the Eagles polka. The Eagles from Philly, they're number one.
Mark, I like tomorrow,
the
John.
Eagles polka, cause everybody has the mania. For the Eagles from Pennsylvania.
Fly, Eagles, fly. You are the very best. Fly, Eagles,
that accordion's
fly.
For you, bud.
You stand out from all the rest. Share the spirit. The Eagles are number one. It's time to spread good cheer, cause everyone is here to cheer for Philly's Eagles.
I know that's one of Larkin's most favorite instruments, the accordion.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But that was nice. I want to tell you, we had a lot of fun. All the local stations were playing it over the weekend. So a lot of fun we had. Oh, God have mercy. I got a lot of comments on it. And Larkin, you know a lot of the people who are singing in that particular selection. So great job for everybody that was involved. Well,
I have a new ringtone for my phone now.
at least.
We're all Eagles fans now.
Mark, thank you for the great report on the Small Business Administration, Linda McMahon. That was great to know that that was something so important to you, to us, to American workers. I'm appealing to everybody to go out as you buy your Eagles wear, to look at the labels and make sure you speak up and say, hey, why isn't this shirt or this hat or this scarf or even the underdog mask made in the USA? I'd like to have some of our local businesses hear this message and start getting these products back on the shelf. Can you imagine if all the fans were sitting there with 100% Made in America Eagles wear? Wouldn't that be great? Well, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, and I will be with you again Saturday at 11. I'll be looking at the president's address this Tuesday at 9 p.m. And I want to say thanks again to Rich Loges. Happy birthday. Popolsku Stolat Boy. Okay, guys, the very best.
Bye-bye.
Curtis, thank you so much. Mark, Larkin, and Rich. And Henry, make sure when you get today's rebroadcast, send it out to all of your family members and friends. Have a great one.